You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
Need. And HomeAdvisor is absolutely free to use. At HomeAdvisor, you can read customer reviews of the pros, even use the cost guide to find out what hundreds of other home projects cost in your area. And because HomeAdvisor knows it's important to find a pro you can trust in your home, they conduct background checks on their service professionals. It's just one of the reasons more than 25 million homeowners have used HomeAdvisor. Go to rebuild.homeadvisor.com to find the right pro for your project. That's rebuild.homeadvisor.com.
A spokesman for the ISIS terror group says it has accepted a pledge of loyalty from Nigeria-based Boko Haram that was made last weekend. But West Africa expert Elizabeth Donnelly says it's unlikely the two militant organizations can combine their firepower because of the geographic distance between them.
An exchange in practical terms, be it in expertise or in weaponry and resources, becomes that much more difficult.
She says it may be propaganda.
Both organizations will understand that presentationally claiming that they now belong to some kind of club together will get people talking about them, which they are.
Meanwhile, U.S. officials say more people from small Caribbean nations are joining ISIS, and they could potentially get across the U.S. border when they return home. Authorities in Turkey have detained 16 Indonesians who were trying to cross the border into Syria to join ISIS. 11 of them were children. This is USA Radio News.
What fuels you? Here's Kim going downtown for a dance class. Going to her daughter's soccer game.
Come on, Katie, you can do it! Woo-hoo!
Kim fuels up at Exxon and Mobil stations, where our quality gasoline helps improve fuel economy, and where she could win $1,000 in free...
The news is sponsored by Patton, Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc.
In America, we believe in a future that is better than today. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has been working hard for their clients' futures, never taking a bailout, helping generations achieve dreams, buy homes, put their kids through college, retire how they want to. Today, Patton, Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. They are ready to help you feel more confident about your financial future. Put the strength of a global financial leader to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton, Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you achieve your dreams and goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. That's 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Ameriprise Financial Services, Incorporated. Member FINRA and SIPC.
Good afternoon. I'm Pat Smits, and the program It's the Law. We will talk today about some of the things that are happening in New Jersey with respect to legal issues. My guest today, Kevin Kilcommons, is not able to be here. Kevin will be rescheduled in one of the next few weeks, and I was going to have him in to talk about franchise law. I think a lot of people are interested in franchises. Kevin is someone who is one of the lawyers in Hunterdon County, and frankly, one of the few lawyers in this area who deals with franchise law. So, as I usually say, it's always better to get some advice before you plunge forward. But what about the weather? If you've been outside today, it's a beautiful day. Perhaps I brought some of the nice weather back from Florida, where I've been for the last couple weeks. And good thing you can't see me. I'm a bit sunburned, and shame on me. But in any event, what's going to happen with our weather? At least it's been warm. Everything's starting to melt. Tonight we can expect, however, rain. There's about a 70% chance of rain tonight. And unfortunately, 100% chance of rain tomorrow. So watch for the flooding. A lot of the back roads are flooded, and I think if we have rain all day tomorrow, it's going to increase the flooding because a lot of the, most of the area is still frozen. The ground's frozen, so it tends to run off rather than go into the ground. So what's happening tomorrow night? Again, about a 30% chance of showers tomorrow night. Actually, on Sunday, it should be very nice but breezy. So the high on Sunday is going to be approximately 48 degrees. So that should be a nice day, although it is expected to be breezy. I'm not sure. Winds possibly 9 to 14 miles an hour. So it depends. There could be some gusty wind. But on Sunday night, expect partly cloudy weather. And again, on Sunday, on Monday, we should have a beautiful day, mostly sunny, high of about 54 degrees. So it's starting to warm up. And into Tuesday, again, partly sunny, high again in the high 40s. So tomorrow's not the day. If you have a lot of work to do in the house, tomorrow's the day to do that. So we'll be right back after a brief message.
I'm Dave Lang with Insight Financial Services and a proud member of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Even in this difficult economy, our family of companies, including Insight Financial, Premier College Funding, and the Insight Tax and Accounting Group, have grown and prospered. I believe that our participation in all of the opportunities that the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce offers to its members strongly contributes to our success.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Well, we're back again. The program, as I said, it's the law. My name is Pat Smits. I'm an attorney here in Hunterdon County. And for those of you who listen or know me, you know that I limit my practice to family law matters. However, I'd like to give people information about all areas of law and some of the latest things that are going on in cases and statutes and other things. And today, what I thought I'd like to talk to you about is the Supreme Court. And in our case, of course, we have a trial level. There are various courts in the trial level, from special civil through chancery. And then we have an appellate division, which is an intermediate appellate division, meaning that anybody can appeal from any decision, a final decision of the trial court. And then we also, of course, our highest court is the New Jersey Supreme Court. Our justices are really esteemed. Their opinions may not always agree with them, but they are well thought out. And they handle only cases that either, if an appellate court, there is a three-judge panel in an appellate court, if one of the judges dissent don't go along with the other two in a three-panel decision, then automatically, as of right, someone could go up to the Supreme Court. However, ordinarily, you have to file a request, and the court decides what cases they're going to hear. They will hear cases that have constitutional issues and other very important issues. But that's not the only thing that the court does, because as those of us who went to school and remember, we have three branches of government. We, of course, have the governor and the branch of government with respect to the governor, and then we also have the legislative branch, the legislature, and they, of course, pass statutes. And then the governor decides whether or not to sign them, along with doing a lot of other things that the governor does in his role. And then the other is the judicial system. And they really are three independent groups. So why is that important? Well, when it comes to statutes, legislation, that's within the realm of the legislature. However, the Supreme Court also issues rules governing the courts in the state of New Jersey. So on substantive law, And generally, if there's a statute, it's dealt with by statute. And, of course, the courts interpret statutes, and they try cases based on the statutes. However, what there is for attorneys and for anyone going through the process, there are all of the procedural things that we have to deal with. And that's what the Supreme Court deals with, all rules governing the courts. And the reason I'm talking about that today is that the Supreme Court designates committees that look into different areas of the courts. For example, and the reason I'm talking about it is that the Supreme Court committees are constituted on a two-year cycle. And so they have reported just recently from the 2013 to 2015 cycle. And at this point, anyone can go on to the judiciary website, just NJ Judiciary, and when you pull that up, that site up, you will see that the Supreme Court committee's reports are listed. Excuse me. So why is this of interest? Well, it would be interested if, I'm interested, obviously, in the Family Practice Committee report. Have not yet read it. It's 129 pages. But the other committees, and people might be interested, certainly lawyers are interested, lawyers who practice in the various areas are very interested. There is, for example, a complementary dispute resolution committee. Now, some people talk about alternative dispute resolution. Our court has, rather than talk about an alternative, they talk about it as a complementary dispute resolution because it, in fact, overlaps with some of the trial issues. For example, in family cases, in matrimonial cases, if someone files a complaint and a counterclaim and it's going through the procedure, at some point, if the case has not been settled, parties will be required to go to mediation. Now, this is not legislated. It is part of the court rules. So that is one of the issues. For example, the Committee on Complementary Dispute Resolution and the Family Practice Committee both looked at this issue. And now something else that's come in is, of course, we've had the legislature. Not only did they pass an alimony statute that changed our alimony, but they also they passed the collaborative law statute. And since this was signed at about the same time, people have heard about the change in the alimony by statute, but they haven't heard much about the collaborative law process. And so now that that statute has been passed, the Supreme Court and the Complementary Dispute Resolution Committee will, of course, have rules and will ask the Supreme Court to enact rules. So what the committees do is they look at various issues that are brought before them and they make recommendations. And these recommendations go to the Supreme Court for their review. And why that's important is all of the committee reports are published and anyone in the general public can make comments on the reports. Now, this year, all comments are due by April 10th, 2015. So, if you're interested in an area of law, I'll tell you about the various committees. In addition to Complementary Dispute Resolution and the Family Practice Committee, there's also a Criminal Practice Committee. There's a Committee on Minority Concerns. There is a Municipal Court Committee. And there are also two committees on rules of evidence. Now, obviously, rules of evidence is that area of law is, and that's a special book that those of us who are attorneys have to rely on as to what, in fact, for example, something simple. What do you have to do to offer something in evidence? What is a document, for example, that can be? One of the areas, of course, is expert reports, any other reports, police reports in criminal cases, and what, in fact, can be offered in evidence. Now, the Rules Committee, the Rules of Evidence, they always look at the rules and they make recommendations with respect to any rule changes. Now, of course, it gets a little complicated, but I think that's enough said. So then what happens? The Supreme Court takes a look at the committee recommendations, and they also look at all the comments on rules, and they determine whether or not a rule should be enacted. And so that is what happens. And if I tell you that the rule book right now in New Jersey is over an inch thick, it in fact is. But this is a great collaboration between the courts and trial courts, Supreme Court practitioners, people who work in the AOC and in other departments, because the committees, the various committees, are made up of both judges and attorneys. For example, I served on the Family Practice Committee for many years and was the vice chair of that committee under Judge Serpentelli. And Judge Serpentelli was the assignment judge in, Ocean County, excuse me. And he was phenomenal because he was able to build consensus, and we dealt with every issue that came up. Any issue anyone wanted to send a letter or anything else would come up and take a look at rules and how they might be changed and whether there should be recommendations made to the Supreme Court. And then, of course, after providing a comprehensive report to the court and after the court being able to hear from any other groups, any other individuals, then they made changes where they thought appropriate, and those changes are set forth in the rule book. And for example, there are general rules, and they're set forth in they're usually kind of under Rule 1. And so if you, for example, the complementary dispute resolution programs are all under Rule 1:40. So if you look at all of the rules, for example, all of the mediation, all of the organization and management of these programs, as I said, the general mediation, which is Rule 1:40-4, then specific mediation in family part matters. There's mediation in civil, probate, and general equity matters. There's also various complementary dispute resolution programs in the special civil part. The rule also deals with mediation of minor disputes in municipal court matters and civil arbitration. Arbitrators and mediators in the court annex programs, and so they go into the qualifications, and what, for example, in my area of law, what qualifications you'd have to have for custody and parenting time if you were a mediator, and all of the economic mediators, for example, in family part. And this was something that I was also on the Complementary Dispute Resolution Committee of the Supreme Court for a few years, and we set up at that point, we set up the mediation program that is part of the court system. So these are all things that anyone who's interested, I suggest that you pull down or go into, I guess I should say, the judiciary website. As just NJ Judiciary, look in the official website, pull down that first page, or pull up that first page, and you will be able to select any one of the committees to look at the report and what their recommendations are for this year. So again, I suggest anyone who has any interest in this, and certainly I know lawyers will be reading, I'm not saying I'm going to read it this weekend, but I'm definitely going to read the entire 129-page report to see what changes are being proposed. Okay, I'll be back after just a brief a spot from one of our sponsors, and we'll talk about some of the other things that are going on this week in the law.
You're listening to HuntingtonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
Okay, I'm back. I'm Pat Smits. The program, It's the Law. I guess I forgot to say that today is Friday the 13th. And of course, next week, Tuesday, is St. Patrick's Day. What I also neglected to mention is that we are going to have a new member breakfast next Monday, and it's going to be at the Grand Colonial at between 8 and 10 a.m. And I really encourage anyone who is a chamber member, your entree for a wonderful breakfast is to bring a new prospective member. And if in fact you are someone out there who might be interested in joining the chamber, learning more about the chamber, you can come as my guest and just come on in 8 o'clock on Monday morning. And, you know, we will welcome you. We'll tell you more about the chamber. But the other special thing that's going to go on again this year, we're going to have the Irish step dancers. And these are mostly little girls, although last year we had a boy, one or two. And they will, while we're having breakfast, they'll do the Irish step dancing. And anyone who comes in, please think of wearing green, because it is going to be a St. Patrick's Day, day early, but St. Patrick's Day. And we really look forward to having you learn more about the chamber. And this is my special day. So just one thing, I won't bore you with the Irish jokes, some of which I couldn't tell over the radio. But I just want to be sure that one of my favorite Irish sayings is, "May you be in heaven an hour before the devil knows that you are dead." And let's all hope that that happens when we have to have that happen to us. I may tell you one or two jokes at the end of the program. But for now, what else is happening in the legal arena? Well, there haven't been many cases approved for publication in the last few days, but there are some other things in the news that probably are of interest. But there is one case, a labor and employment case, a civil rights case, and this is a case that it's Royster versus New Jersey State Police. It was an appellate division case that's been published. And the in that case, Royster asserted a claim under the Americans with Disabilities Act, which is a federal statute. We usually talk about it as the ADA. And also under the Conscientious Employee Protection Act, which is a New Jersey statute. CEPA is the abbreviation for that. And the appellate division held that the doctrine of state sovereign immunity barred the ADA claim, even though the defendants did not seek dismissal of the claim on that basis. So that's interesting. They did not seek a claim on that basis until they filed a motion for judgment, notwithstanding the verdict. And that meant that the case went to trial and there was a judgment. And at that point, for the first time, the defendants, the New Jersey State Police, filed a motion for a judgment notwithstanding the verdict, which obviously means that they lost. And the appellate division also concluded that the plaintiff's job responsibilities did not preclude him from asserting a SEPA claim. And that was the claim under the Conscientious Employee Protection Act, SEPA. And the appellate division said that he, in that case, he presented sufficient evidence for the jury to consider this claim. However, they reversed the judgment that he was awarded because they remanded it for a new trial because the jury instructions were fatally flawed. So what that means is that when a judge, if any of you have sat on a jury and a trial that goes to conclusion, the judge provides the jury with certain instructions. And if, in fact, the judge provides what the appellate division decides were flawed instructions, then the court, the appellate division, will, in fact, remand it for a new trial. So in this case, whatever the judge, and I have not read the case, the entire case, so whatever the judge instructed the jury, could have instructed them on, not the right standards. There are a variety of things. And usually at that point, the attorneys trying the cases, of course, ask the judge to provide certain instructions to the jury. So in this case, for whatever reason, the appellate division felt they were flawed and sent the case back for a new trial. The last thing in the world somebody wants to have happen, especially someone who was in fact awarded a judgment. Now, the another case that had to do with land use and planning, and in fact that was in re-adoption of NJAC by the New Jersey Council on Affordable Housing. And that was, again, another, that was a Supreme Court case by Justice LaVecchia provided the opinion. And that opinion, the Supreme Court in New Jersey said that the FHA's exhaustion of administrative remedies requirement is dissolved until further order of the court. So the courts in the Supreme Court in New Jersey said the courts may resume their role as a forum of first resort for evaluating municipal compliance with Mount Laurel obligations as provided in the opinion and in the court's corresponding order. So, and then, of course, the court said the effective date was delayed by 90 days, so there could be an orderly transition to the judicial remedies authorized by the court. So the Mount Laurel decision is kind of shorthand to lawyers for the affordable housing and what the municipalities need to do to comply with that. So what else? There's a United States Supreme Court in a multi-million dollar racketeering case over alleged illegal, what they called naked short sales of stock. In that case, it's about to start moving forward in New Jersey State Court. And it's moving forward, this was almost 3 years ago after it was filed. And so the Justice Samuel Alito, and who is from New Jersey, of the U.S. Supreme Court, denied a request to stay a decision by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit. And the Third Circuit had remanded the suit back to Morris County Superior Court based on a lack of federal subject matter jurisdiction. So for the last 3 years, this case has been winding its way through the federal courts, and now it's going to be back in Morris County. And I'm sure that's going to take a very long time for that case to be handled. So that is, I guess we can be happy it's not in Hunterdon County. Now, another case is the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit. Again, this is federal. And that U.S. Court of Appeals ruled on March 11th that a motor carrier exemption to the Fair Labor Standards Act overtime pay requirement does not apply to truck drivers who spend all or part of their time operating vehicles that weigh under 10,000 pounds. So this is really a precedent. This is a ruling, and in that case, the appeals court for the Third Circuit, which is our circuit, affirmed a district court judge's ruling granting overtime pay to an armored vehicle driver, Ashley McMaster. And Ashley McMaster was formerly an hourly employee of Eastern Armored Services and regularly worked in excess of 40 hours a week, but did not receive overtime pay. So that anyone in that situation, if you're an employee or an employer, that is a really what we call a precedential ruling, that this exemption, and it's the motor carrier exemption to the Fair Labor Standards Act. And so under that exemption, overtime pay is not required. However, that does not apply to truck drivers who spend, and they said, all or part of their time operating vehicles that weigh under 10,000 pounds. So this should have a real impact on many, many truck drivers. So stay tuned to see what else comes up under that one. Now, there's also, there was a dismissal of a legal malpractice suit over a home sale. And in this case, a litigant was looking to pin a real estate transaction gone awry on her lawyers. And it was a deal that eventually went through for $350,000 less than the original sales price. And the litigant didn't win. The Essex County Superior Court judge dismissed the legal malpractice case against a law firm in Jersey City. And the appellate division affirmed that dismissal and said that the plaintiff in that case against the attorneys had no case. So that's kind of an update on a couple of the things that are happening. I'm going to just go to the news and briefly, and then we'll come back and talk about some other things.
USA Radio News. I'm Kelly Sloan. Ferguson, Missouri remains on edge after the shooting of two police officers. AP correspondent Alex Sands reports.
The shooting came just after midnight as protesters gathered. Hours after Police Chief Thomas Jackson announced his resignation, photojournalist Bradley Rayford was nearby.
The bullets went right past my head. I heard it whoosh past my ear. It was definitely a scary moment.
An ongoing scenario police say is wearing on them.
I'm going to be honest with you. This is beginning at times to be very difficult for any law enforcement agency anywhere to really wrap their arms around.
A city gripped by tension, still calling for change. Alex Sands, Ferguson, Missouri.
Military officials say the salvage of a Black Hawk helicopter that crashed into the waters off Florida could begin this afternoon. Four soldiers and seven Marines were killed during a routine training mission Tuesday. This is USA Radio News.
I'm Mike Huckabee. I was the governor of Arkansas and ran for president in 2008, and I used to be a diabetic. One of the coolest campaigns I ever took on and won was the crusade that reversed my type 2 diabetes naturally. I was able to get off the medications I'd taken, and I lost 110 pounds of fat in the process. If you or someone you care about has type 2 diabetes or pre-diabetes, I urge you to pay close attention to what I'm about to tell you. The same methods I use to reverse my type 2 diabetes are found today in the Diabetes Solution Kit. It's an all-natural plan that really could work for you in reversing type 2 diabetes and prevent it from coming back, all in as little as 4 weeks, with your doctor's approval. Stop suffering. Here's how to get your hands on the Diabetes Solution Kit today.
Get your Diabetes Solution Kit now at 99diabetes.com. Everything you need to reverse your type 2 diabetes or pre-diabetes like Governor Huckabee did is at 99diabetes.com. Reverse your diabetes today at 99diabetes.com. That's 99diabetes.com.
Hi, I help students gain admission to colleges that are a great academic, social, and financial fit, where they will be successful, happy, and graduate on time with minimal debt. Email Diana at creativecollegeconsulting.com for a free consultation.
The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce is a Forward New Jersey Coalition member.
London Bridge is falling down. falling down, falling down. London Bridge is falling down.
In August 2007, the I-35 bridge in Minneapolis collapsed, killing 13 people and injuring 145, including little children trapped on a school bus. The bridge had been rated structurally deficient, but those warnings were ignored.
Build it up with iron and steel, iron and steel.
In New Jersey, there are 479 bridges carrying over 8 million vehicles a day, rated worse.
Iron and steel will bend and bow, bend and bow, bend.
These aren't just bridges waiting to be fixed. They're tragedies waiting to happen. On June 30th, the state's transportation fund will be empty. We need to replenish it now, because next time, it could be your family on that bridge. Go to forwardnewjersey.com and find out how you can help. Paid for by Forward New Jersey.
Well, we're back with the program, It's the Law. Just a little bit more information on the lawsuit. And I said that the disability actually deemed the state immune from disability lawsuits. And in fact, there was a $1.06 million verdict won by a former state trooper. And what the court said is, in this Royster case that I talked about before the break, that they held that the doctrine of state sovereign immunity precludes the Plaintiffs Americans with Disabilities Act claim. And as I said, this was done and overturned this $1.06 million verdict, even though the attorneys for the state police did not even bring it up until after the judgment for $1.06 million was entered after a trial. So that, can you imagine thinking you're winning over $1 million and then being told after it went up on appeal that it was being tossed out and you had to go back to try the case? Under the state disabilities. In any event, there's another, there are some novel suits out there, and I think anyone who is an employer should be aware of this, and that is what is an employer's obligation to balance the right to religious expression at work and the right to be free of unwelcoming proselytizing by coworkers. And that's the focus of a pair of cases in the federal court in Camden, New Jersey. So this is interesting because, what rights do employees have to express their religious views, and what rights do other employees have to be free from that proselytizing that is to them unwelcomed? But And the problem, from an employer standpoint, and all of our businesses need to be aware of that, because the lawsuit itself is going to be the problem and the cost involved, because in the cases, in both cases, the employers face potential liability for failing to heed workers' complaints about on-the-job religious recruitment from colleagues. And the suits bring claim, the claims are for religious discrimination and religious harassment under Title VII. So these are federal cases, but any employer, again, needs to be concerned if, in fact, employees are complaining that other employees are pressuring them, harassing them, or proselytizing. And as I mentioned, the New Jersey Supreme Court again ruled that the judiciary are once again in control of determining how many units of low and moderately priced housing the municipal governments will be responsible for building. And the reason for that is the court cited the inability of the State Council on Affordable Housing to come up with new rules. And so that low and moderate income residents or entities acting on their behalf can turn to trial courts for relief when they believe a municipality is attempting to avoid its constitutional responsibility to provide for affordable housing. And again, let's face it, these suits are costing municipalities millions of dollars. It costs everybody a tremendous amount of money. And, you know, we should all be aware of this because it's our taxes that pay for these suits. And I don't think anyone is going to ever say that real estate taxes in New Jersey are doing anything other than going up. Now, the other thing, and this was a very unusual in my experience, that a juror was actually indicted for lying, a potential juror. And so what happens when jury selection, if you've never been in a jury pool, you've never heard and gone to court and been part of the jury pool in what we call voir dire, jurors are asked questions, and you have to be truthful. So in this case, a juror who was removed during deliberations in a New Jersey murder trial for lying during the jury selection process is now facing perjury charges. This is highly unusual. At least I'm not aware that this happens very often. But in any event, in Essex County, a grand jury indicted this juror on three counts of false swearing. And the person's name was Sanford, was a juror in the murder trial of Travis Hartsfield Jr., who was convicted last fall of murdering his 20-month-old daughter. And he was convicted of murdering her in March of 2011. So I'm sure that he is going to use this as somehow this was tainting the jury. And so I'm not sure and don't have any more information as to how they found it out, what happened. But that's, certainly something, you don't lie. But this is unusual for someone. And so I'm assuming that it was a pretty serious situation. Now, we often say that, death ends cases, certainly ends divorce cases. Not so under all circumstances. And if you're at all interested in a case, it was not approved for publication, but you certainly can find it on the judiciary website. I have certainly read it, and it was a pretty egregious situation. But this was the estate of Beltra versus Beltra, and it was an appellate division decision. And in a divorce action, the plaintiff wife died before the final hearing. And the judge, finding in the circumstances, warranted the imposition of equitable relief. So even though there wasn't a divorce and only equitable distribution in New Jersey can only be done as part of a divorce. In other words, you can't do early equitable distribution. And so if someone dies, their estate is not going to be entitled to equitable distribution of the assets. However, they certainly can, under certain circumstances, be entitled to equitable relief, and this is what happened here. So here, even though the husband expected the case to end when his wife died during the proceedings, it didn't happen. And if you read the case, you would understand that was a really fair result because he was hiding money, taking a lot of cash out of the country, etc. So her estate sued, and they were, in fact, entitled to equitable relief. Another news brief that's recent, in fact, today. Apparently, the lawyers who represent victims of Superstorm Sandy, there was an announcement on March 11th that the Federal Emergency Management Agency will reopen 144,000 flood insurance claims. So this, if you know anyone out there who, has a potential claim, then you really need to look into it. And this is a corrective action. And, of course, it's good news for property owners who feel their claims got short shrift. And it's also good for law firms, since some of those claimants are likely to need legal representation, according to lawyers familiar with FEMA's plans. But if you know anyone that would have a claim, that may be reopened. And FEMA, of course, FEMA, is the Federal Emergency Management Agency. So homeowners, let's hope that, so many of them did not get a fair shake. And let's hope that this helps. Now, there's also legislation, and I think this comes out of some of the tragedies that are happening around the country, but our lawmakers here, our legislators in New Jersey, are considering legislation that would, in fact, require the state attorney general to appoint a special prosecutor to investigate and, if necessary, prosecute police officers who are alleged to have engaged in official misconduct or are suspected of police brutality or using excessive force. And, one of the complaints now is that, these police are being investigated by their own. And so they're trying to, in most states, trying to find some more neutral body to do the investigation. I know that, for example, with DIFAS workers, if complaints are filed against a DIFAS worker, now it's Division of Child Protection, but if there are complaints filed against the workers in that department, ordinarily, they are the investigative arm for any abuse or neglect allegations, but they have a special prosecutor's office, a unit that handles all of those investigations for that same concern that there could be some kind of a conflict. And, of course, believe it or not, I guess we can always believe it, there are a lot of false claims filed against DIFAS workers based on people's anger that the DIFAS workers involved in investigating their case. So that it's not unusual for someone, well, I'm not saying it's usual, but it happens where somebody will say that a DIFAS worker is abusing their children or neglecting their children, and that's the kind of investigation that has to be done. Now, there another very interesting case for lawyers is that expert opinions that contradict the facts in a case cannot be admitted into evidence. Now, that, again, was a New Jersey Supreme Court ruling, a unanimous ruling, and it reversed an appellate division ruling in a case called Townsend versus Pierre. And the appellate division allowed such an opinion, even though they allowed it through the use of a hypothetical question and a corresponding instruction to the jury. But basically what this means is that the Supreme Court said that, just because it's an expert report, it does not have to be admitted. And this case cited a long line of cases and what the judge has to do if, in fact, someone is objecting to an expert report. And so in that case, the Townsend case, there was uncontradicted testimony that a driver's view was unimpeded by shrubbery on the defendant's property. So the trial court in that case properly barred the causation opinion of the plaintiff's expert and granted summary judgment, basically said there was no case. And what they called that is the opinion in that case, the expert's opinion, was a net opinion. But the net opinion was directly contradicted by factual evidence. And so that's why it was, in fact, the trial judge who was overruled by the appellate division, was then, again, his opinion was supported by the Supreme Court. And that happened to be one of those cases that the Supreme Court decided to take up. Well, let's give you some information on a couple of our sponsors, and then we'll be back for the last few minutes.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness.
The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce is a Forward New Jersey Coalition member.
London Bridge is falling down, falling down, falling down. London Bridge is falling down.
In August 2007, the I-35 bridge in Minneapolis collapsed, killing 13 people and injuring 145, including little children trapped on a school bus. The bridge had been rated structurally deficient, but those warnings were ignored.
Build it up with iron and steel, iron and steel.
You shouldn't give for the accolades. You shouldn't give for the back pats. You shouldn't give for the tax breaks either. At Jersey Mike's, we think you should give for one reason and one reason only. To give. Come in to any Jersey Mike's location during March for our month of giving. And join us as we help support local charities across the country all month long. It's your chance to get a tasty sub sandwich and help do something good for the community you call home. And on Wednesday, March 25th, Jersey Mike's is proud to be donating 100% of sales to a charity right in your own backyard. Jersey Mike's. Help nourish. Help flourish. Be a sub above.
Hi, we're back, and let's see what else is happening here in the news. And there's a statute that criminalizes driving only during court-imposed term of suspension. And there was the case that you want to look at, if you're interested in that, is State versus Perry. And the statute is NJSA 2C colon 40-26 paren A and paren NB and paren. And that makes driving while suspended a fourth-degree criminal offense punishable by a mandatory minimum jail term of 180 days under certain circumstances stemming from driving while intoxicated or refusal to submit to chemical testing. And there were a number of cases that were consolidated, and they were consolidated appeals. And in what the decision was in the consolidated appeals, the appellate panel addressed whether charges can be brought under the statute when the act of driving occurs beyond the determinate sentenced term of suspension, but before reinstatement. So in these cases, what happened is it was prior to, there was no question that someone was driving, but it was after the term of suspension, but before the person had their license reinstated. And so during that time, the driver continues on administrative suspension. So in the case, the state of New Jersey contended that the law had to be interpreted to mean that an individual could be charged until he or she paid the required and requisite license restoration fees and complied with all administrative requirements and was, in fact, reinstated by the Motor Vehicle Commission. Now, the defendants in these cases responded that to the extent the meaning of the period of license suspension, as the state proposed, that would violate the language of the statute and render the statute unworkable and unconstitutional. And so the court went on and talked about subsection A of the statute. In that subsection, the offense occurs if the driver has been convicted of a DWI or refusal to take a breathalyzer, doesn't make any difference which, and has And what the quote of the language is, previously been convicted of and driving while suspended, while under suspension for that first offense. So in other words, what happens is you have to have a DWI and then be convicted of driving while you're suspended for the DWI or refuse to take the breathalyzer. So that that happens while you're still suspended. So the court said it follows that the second or subsequent offense must also occur while the driver is under suspension for that first offense. And it would be illogical to conclude otherwise. So that, and then subsection B provides that a driver commits a crime if he drives during the period of license suspension while his license was suspended or revoked for a second or subsequent DWI or refusal. Now, the court held that the legislature made this section applicable solely to drivers with a license suspension for a second or subsequent DWI or refusal. And the statute itself is silent as to those driving without reinstatement beyond the court-imposed term of suspension. So the court said that had the legislature intended to include those persons, the necessary language could have been easily included, but it was not. So that the appellate panel concluded that the legislative intent was clear from the plain language of the statute, and that the statute punishes those who drive while suspended for violation of the DWI and refusal law by exposing them to a criminal record and incarceration without parole when they drive during the court-imposed period of suspension. So that's very important, because when they say criminalizing driving during a period of administrative suspension was not implemented, because that's if the legislature had intended that, they would have, in fact, put it in the statute. So again, this shows not that anybody should drive while they're intoxicated or refuse to take a breathalyzer, but it does show that, in fact, you have to be very careful and look at the statute. And if the legislature had intended to do this with administrative, they would have done it. So in any event, that's kind of wrapping it up for today on the program It's the Law. We're going to get some news, and then we'll go on and hear from the sports guys.
The news is sponsored by Patton, Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc.
Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they'll live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their own terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton, Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. They are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within your reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton, Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you achieve your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. That's 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Ameriprise Financial Services, Incorporated, member FINRA and SIPC.
USA Radio News. I'm Kelly Sloan. Ferguson, Missouri remains on edge after the shooting of two police officers. AP correspondent Alex Sands reports.
The shooting came just after midnight as protesters gathered. Hours after Police Chief Thomas Jackson announced his resignation, photojournalist Bradley Rayford was nearby.
The bullets went right past my head. I heard it whoosh past my ear. It was definitely a scary moment.
An ongoing scenario police say is wearing on them.
I'm going to be honest with you. This is beginning at times to be very difficult for any law enforcement agency anywhere to really wrap their arms around.
A city gripped by tension.